between the early years of him being anointed to be king when he was a teenager, to slaying the giant when he was very young, to when he becomes king at the age of 30. So that in-between decade, basically between, we might think, between 20 and 30. And as we thought about that some, of course, we've been studying, and some of this will be repetitive in some of the same passages that I'm drawing different points from. And we talked about with the hatred and jealousy between Saul and David. But as I thought about this period, it got me to thinking that in many ways, we go through our between years as well. And you may be going through one of these now. If you think about this in terms of kind of trying to graph it out, I put this as an illustration. And think about David between anointing and killing Goliath till he became king, basically his 20s. But then we can also think about this from a youth, from those who will be in their 16, 17, 18 range, kind of when you're winning most likely to succeed. And then when you're actually finding out what success looks like and nobody's giving you an award for it, right? To your profession. You know, what does it take to get there? You know, maybe even 25, 30 years of age now. And so thinking about from youth to being in your profession. And this is getting delayed often more. And so maybe that's a decade too. Or someone being young and single, desiring, really wanting a marriage relationship, really wanting a dating relationship, maybe having to spend numerous years single and enjoying that single life, but also maybe feeling like they're between where they wanted to be and where they would like to be, where they were and where they like to be, which is marriage and kids. And then this sometimes happens often unexpectedly and undesired with divorce and widowed. Now, I don't want to necessarily put an age on that, but divorce can happen at any age after marriage, so it could be, you know, when you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s, and certainly even with widowhood, losing a spouse. We typically think about that later in life, but we all know that we can lose a spouse very early in life, too. But that can cause a in-between transitionary period between remarriage and new beginnings, whatever comes out of that. There can be a career loss where you feel like you got fired, your career changed in the sense that the workforce changed and that left you out, and you had to seek a new career, like all the men and those who were connected with General did several years ago, and how that industry shut down in Mayfield, so a lot of people were out of work and they had to transition into something else. And so that can be a new career. It can be being married, getting to that stage, and then going through infertility issues and desiring to have children. And some couples struggle with this for years of not being able to have children. And it creates a lot of discouragement because you want to have children, you want to move to that next stage in life, but whatever reason, you're not blessed with being able to have children. And then it can be entering a job. To really, you know, it's a starter level job, and some people really desire to really move on to that next level, that promotion or that desired job. Really what I want to do. You know, I'm just doing this now for the time, but I'm just getting experience. I really want to do this. And so that in between years of that. And so as I thought about this, I thought, you know, this lesson from David hopefully will be practical, and you may not be going through an in between years experience. But I would dare say you probably have. And I would say, most likely, you will. And I would dare say, in an audience such as this, that a significant number are going through one of these experiences, and maybe one that's not exactly what I put on the screen, but something that is similar to that. In our culture today as well, we are delaying marriage, and I put this statistic up here just to show you how the in-between years in our culture is growing. I'm not sure the reasons, but the age of marriage, this is females, this is males, in the 1890s was close to this, but then it began to drop in the 30s and 40s. It got really low. For females, it was around the age of 20 in 1955. And then, of course, since that time period, it's been going up to, in 2019, the average age for a male to marry was almost 30 years of age. So in many ways, that is a long in-between year segment. And so I have four thoughts as I approach the text of David's life with this mindset in mind. What lessons could we get from David's life while he went from, hey, you're going to be king one day, hey, you killed the Goliath, you're an awesome man, to I'm finally king at age 30. How did he deal with those 10 years of in between? And I have four thoughts. First thought is, well, let me say this. I'm not there yet. I got ahead of myself. Forgot this page. These are major transition points. That is, these are defining moments. These in-between years are really crucial because they often define what we will become in the future. And they define how we handle the challenges and trials that have just come upon us. They often determine our future faith. This in-between years, if we think about young people going into the professional world or young people going to college, as I mentioned this morning, are often those defining years that determine who they marry. It determines their faith, if they remain faithful or not, what job they get, all those kinds of things. And so it's very important years. These are major transition points. After the divorce, after a divorce, after the death of a spouse, after all those kind of things, those are huge, impactful moments in your life that really are going to determine much of the future of your life. They are times of reevaluation and times of new beginnings. And thus, there are times when we can develop destructive habits. And so I said all that to say, I think it's important to give a lesson to this and to give some thought to this that we often neglect, because these are key defining moments of our life. And they often determine our faith. They can even be times that really determine whether we make it to heaven or not. And we can lose our faith during this time period. We can become discouraged. And they can cause us to develop destructive habits, like giving in to various struggles emotionally, like depression, to giving in to alcohol, drug abuse, all kinds of things like that. And so these major transition points in our life can be significant. So here's four points that I have from David about this. Lessons from the between years from 1 Samuel. First point is, when you go through these in-between years, deal with authority respectfully. Deal with authority respectfully. Even abusive authority. Even abusive authority. As I thought about this, it seems that one of the things that I hear a lot from those who are directly working with or involved with those in their 20s, those who we might think of as the millennials or Generation X and things now, it seems that this issue always comes up. In the older generations, and I guess this has gone on for every generation, but you see it even now especially, that the older generations feel like, and employers feel like, that the younger generation, they come in wanting the same salary that their parents had, they wanted the same rights and the same things immediately, they don't want to work real hard and real long, maybe for a promotion often, and they want it now. And they often feel disrespected. And older generations, as it's been throughout history, can often feel disrespected by younger generations. And so when I thought about and studied the life of David, when David was going through this decade of after he had been anointed king and made the most successful and future guy to succeed when killing Goliath, he still remembered his place. He still remembered that he was a shepherd, and he was respectful to the authority that he was under. And so he respected, and we did a lesson on this a couple weeks ago, and how he gave grace to Saul. But in chapter 24, verses 6 through following, you see that even when he had the opportunity to kill Saul, this one who was causing him so much grief, David refused to put out his hand against what he calls the Lord's anointed. He would not disrespect and would not kill the Lord's anointed. Later on in chapter 26, he has a second opportunity to put Saul to death, this time at the middle of the camp. And he could have used a spear to kill him, but he chose not to do it because he would not be disrespectful to the Lord's anointed. Later on in 2 Samuel chapter 1, when a man claims to have killed Saul, one of Saul's bodyguards and others who've come up on this, claims to have killed Saul and took credit for killing Saul, David actually, and he was going to David to basically brag, say, give me an award, I killed Saul. And David, in one of the most ironic, surprising twists of this man's life, says, you're not going to get an award. But he actually has him put to death because he says, you killed the Lord's anointed. And so David dealt respectfully with those who were in authority over us. In 1 Peter chapter 2, 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 19, the New Testament emphasizes this point. It says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor or as supreme, or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil, and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God and honor the emperor. Be respectful. In a day and age where they were very wicked in their government officials, Peter says, honor the emperor. Honor the institution of government. Honor those who are in authority over you. In chapter 5, verse 5, he tells them, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. And commentators debate exactly whether that's the elders of the church or that's elders in the sense of older people. Here in context, it seems to be more the elders of the church because Peter has just addressed them. But the Bible actually makes both points throughout Scripture. The book of Proverbs emphasizes repeatedly to give honor to the gray-haired person. And that's, in our culture, sometimes, you know, we don't want gray hair. But in the Bible, it honors and esteems the gray-haired person. And the idea is that we need to respect those who are older than us. We can learn from them. We should want their instruction, and we should respect them. And so we must deal with authority. And I would say this, even abusive authority, because that's the point from the book of David, or from the story of David. Because Saul was authority, but he was an abusive authority. And so you're going to probably work for a boss sometimes that's not always going to be the best boss. And you may get in positions in the community with political officials that you think aren't that bad, aren't that good, or even in our nation that aren't that good. But we have a necessity as Christians to give a certain level of honor to them and to be respectful of them. And you'll find that that will take you a long ways during your in-between years and will bless you with probably getting to where you want to go as you go forward. Number two, expect moral testing. During the in-between years, you're going to be tested because your foundations have been removed. It's no hidden fact that a lot of people start coming to church, start thinking about getting serious with church, not even, maybe when they get married, but especially when they have children, right? They have children, start thinking about the faith of those children, start thinking about developing those things. It's also known that people often are a lot more stable with the church, committed to the church, after they get married than versus just single. Now, we talk about those factors, and we know that families cause cause people to be more stable in the church, cause people to care more often about spiritual things, and being married causes people often to do that. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, certainly single saints can do a lot of things, but it's often harder to live. It's often viewed that way, at least, and single people probably can testify to this. It's often more difficult, maybe, and our culture makes it more difficult to live for Christ often as a single person, especially as a young single person. You need that camaraderie. And marriage and children gives you that stability. Now, I want to reverse that. The in-between years, if you go through a divorce, you go through a widow situation, you're reversing that, aren't you? And you're getting back to a single life. And so the foundations, what you often base your entire routine have been removed. And so if a young person, too, they've had the stability of their parents. We're going to church every Sunday. We're getting up. You get up and go. But now when you go off to college, what? The foundations have been removed. You can stay in bed. No one's going to be there to get you up, say, we got to go to church. If your mom texts or calls you, you can ignore it, right? You're away from them. The foundations have been removed. So therefore, you can expect, when you go through a in-between years experience, you can expect moral testing. Moral testing. It is the case that when people lose their job or they have things like that happen, they often go through moral testing. Look at David in chapter 25 and chapter 27. In chapter 25, I'm not going to read, obviously, these entire chapters, but I want to give you a brief survey of them. In chapter 25, you have the story of David and Abigail. And in this story, David, who was kind of like, had his own rough riders, we might say, kind of his group of tough men, about 400 or so men. And the way they were kind of making money, they were like a band of, in some ways, like Robin Hood kind of figures. And they would protect certain farmers from other raiders and keep them protected. And so they had been offering their services and had protected a man named Nabal so that he could shear his sheep. And Nabal was a very rich man. It says in verse 2 that he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. Well, it was time for sheep shearing, and David and his men had provided protection for him. Well, David then, after the sheep had been sheared, it was custom for you to pay the person who was protecting you. Well, it came time to pay up. So David sent some men over. And the men he sent over were strongly rejected. Nabal, whose name means foolish, and who is described throughout this text as a worthless man, as a wicked man. Nabal said, I'm not going to pay you anything. Who is David? I don't even know who David is. And the servants go back and tell David. David says, everybody strap your sword on. We're going to see Nabal. So he was going to get Nabal. Some of the young servants who had been out there with sheep shearing go to Abigail, who is described as a beautiful woman and as a discerning woman. She was a wise woman. She is Nabal's wife. And she hears about this. She doesn't tell Nabal. She runs and meets David, intercepts him. David was going to murder and kill Nabal. She intercepts him, and she makes a speech recorded in verses 23 down through verse 31. And she basically says, forgive my stupid husband. Forgive my foolish husband. His name is foolish. And that's what he is. And he was a worthless fellow, verse 25. She says to him, please, I know who you basically are. You're going to be this king. So verse 28, please forgive the trespass of your servant. Now David, then in verse 32, and I'll read some of this. David says to her, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion. Blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt. from avenging myself with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male. Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition. David turned around and did not go and punish Nabal. The Lord will actually strike, down in verse 38, the Lord about 10 days later will strike Nabal and will put him to death. David then liked Abigail, was impressed with her, and he will send some young men over to ask her to be his wife. Real romantic kind of thing, it seemed like. She accepts, and she becomes one of David's wives. Think about that as a 20-year-old man, in his 20s. You can see David. Very, you know, you're going to treat me like that. I'll tell you what I'm going to do to you. Very responsive to his anger. He wasn't seasoned yet with wisdom, was he? He was just going to, I'm going to go and slay every male in your household. And it seems that after Abigail convinces him of the foolishness of this and the sin of this, that he is thankful, because he said that I would have been blood guilty. And he's thankful that Abigail keeps him from reacting out of anger. In chapter 27, there's the story of David going down to the Philistines. And in this story, David is going to tell lies to Achish, the Philistine leader. And he's going to stay there, in verse 7, a year and 4 months. 14 months he lives in the city, that the place where Goliath was from. During this in-between years, it's very, very possible that you're going to really struggle with moral issues, that the world can encroach upon your life. You may struggle with the things of the world, the sins of the world. Oftentimes, young people get into things like partying and alcohol and drugs and premarital sex and all these kind of things. And it's kind of a leaving or a going away from the foundations of your youth. During the in-between years, there will be greater moral testing because the foundation has been removed. David had greater moral testing. And David, let me say this, David failed some. He seems to have failed here in chapter 27. And he almost failed, if it had not been for Abigail, in chapter 25. He's going to make some errors during this time period. In 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter, talking about the same concept, 1 Peter 4, 12 through 16, the Bible says this, beloved, do not be surprised. Do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. Don't be surprised when you're tested. You're probably going to be tested. But rejoice in so much as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when His glory is revealed. Verse 19 or verse 15, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, as a thief, or evildoer, as a meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. Don't be surprised. Remember, Jesus talked about how we're going to build our house. We're going to build it on the rock, or we're going to build it on the sand. That idea is prevalent as you think about these in-between years. Your foundations have been removed. What are you going to build your life upon? Number three, learn to trust through trials. Trials have come. Don't be surprised. Learn to trust. Look at chapter 30 of 1 Samuel. So this is the passage that I appreciate Pete reading. I know it had some difficult words in it. He did a good job with it. But this passage is important because it talks about this trial. So David had just been with the Philistines. Chapter 29, the Philistines are going to reject him. And David then returns to this land with Ziklag. And the Amalekites had made a raid against him, and they had carried away his wife and his children. And they had taken away all of his men's wife and their children and their sons and daughters. And they, verse number 6, all the people spoke of stoning him. They were so upset with David and his leadership, they were ready to stone him. And David, I would suggest during this time period, David had been, let's just say, flirting with being away from the Lord. He had been telling some dishonest things and doing some dishonest things there with Achish. He realizes now, I got to get my life right. I got to wake up. These people are all against me. We could say he kind of hit rock bottom. The Bible says the people were bitter in their souls, and each for his sons and his daughter. And David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. David wrote so many psalms, and a lot of these psalms were written during this in-between year period, during this when he was in the caves, when he was in the shelters and things. One of those is Psalm chapter 18. Psalm chapter 18. And I want you to notice a few things about this psalm. I want you to look at verse number 6, for example. In my distress, I called upon the Lord. To my God, I cried for help. From his temple, he heard my voice, and my cry to him reached his ears. Think about that verse, and think about what we just read from 1 Samuel. In my distress, I cried to the Lord. The in-between years can often be a refining experience, can be a fiery trial experience, can be difficult, can be a time of reevaluation. Whatever it is, if you've lost your job, or if you're going through a career change, or if you're going through relationship changes, or if you're just, you know, going from high school into college and college into workforce, it can be a real refining experience. And you're probably going to maybe hit some lows. And you're going to be forced to ask yourself, am I going to really trust in God? Do I really believe that God can walk with me and God can get me through this? Am I going to depend upon the Lord? That's why it's the case that we often say that it's during these years, as you think about a young man or young woman, that they really have to develop their own faith. That they have to decide, this is my faith. You have to learn to trust through the trials. David talks more about that in Psalm 18 and about trusting in the Lord. And he does that in many psalms. But we have to learn to trust. I think about 1 Peter. I keep going back to 1 Peter and kind of relaying this passage to what Peter's saying. In chapter 1, verses 6 and following, Peter says this, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials." You're going through these trials. What's the purpose of these trials? "That the tested genuineness of your faith, which is more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire." That faith is tested by fire. "That it may be found to result in the praise and the glory and the honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." You're going to be tested. And your faith has to be refined so that it can give praise and honor and glory to Jesus Christ. In Hebrews chapter 5, verses 7 through 9, even our Lord himself went through something similar when it says, "In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered." We've got to understand that we learn to trust in God. That we don't just have trust, that we often learn to trust. And we grow in our trust. Number 4, We have to patiently pray and listen to God, waiting for the Lord's timing. When you go through the in-between years, probably the hardest part is realizing that maybe what the Lord wants is not for you to get to another mountain, but maybe He wants you right where you are. You know, sometimes we struggle with this idea of, we have these expectations of, all right, now it's this time in my life. Now it's the time for me to get married. Now it's the time for me to have kids. Now it's the time, whatever it is. Now it's the time for me to get this promotion. Now it's the time for me to get this job or whatever it is. And maybe what the Lord's wanting us to do is learn to be content. Maybe it's not about going from one mountain to the other mountain. Maybe it's about living in the valley for a little while. And maybe the expectations and the things that we have for getting to the next mountain isn't what the Lord wants and isn't really what's best for us. And that we're going to discover when we're walking through the valley that many of the blessings we were looking for, we already have. And so we got to learn to pray and be patient. Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 2. So Saul is killed by the Philistines. It's time, right? Saul's killed. I want you to notice what David does. Look at verse 1. After this, after David has been, or Saul has been killed, Jonathan has been killed, and he mourns Jonathan's death, he praises them. Look at verse 1. After this, David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" David didn't say, "Plan the coronation. It's time. I'm ready. Let's take my men and go on up there." What did David do? He had learned in that 10-year period he needed to pray. That it was about the Lord's timing. It says he inquired of the Lord. He said, "Lord, is this the right time?" And the Lord said, "Go up." David said, "To which shall I go up? Where should I go?" And he said, "To Hebron." So David went up there, and two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, everyone with his household. They lived in the towns of Hebron. The men of Judah came. Notice that. The men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. David's going to serve 7 years only over the house of Judah. He had to wait another 7 years before he gains the entire kingdom. At 30 years of age, the Bible will tell us, he becomes king over the Judah. He'll wait 7 years. At 37 years of age, he will become king over the entire land of Israel. Now, we have to learn to pray and listen to God, waiting for the Lord's timing. Think about Philippians chapter 4. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul gives us some inspired advice that we need to heed. When he says this, beginning in verse 5, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." Don't try to determine what the next mountain always has to be. Don't always be anxious for that. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, look around at all the blessings you have now. Be thankful for what God has blessed you with now. And let your requests, let your desires, let what you want be made known to God. Now, I don't always live like that. I bet most of us could say we don't live like that. But isn't that a wonderful way to live? To seek, to be content. That's what Paul's talking about in this chapter as well. Being content with what we have. To pray, to ask God, "God, is this what you want me to do? This is what I'm thinking. I'm thankful for the blessings I have now." and seek His wisdom, seek His instruction. During the between years, patiently pray and listen to God, waiting for His timing. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14, the Bible tells us that we ought to try to, as we mature, verse 14, but solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained. You got to try to discern. Have your powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Don't just jump at it. Stop and think. Have I prayed about this? Is this what the Lord wants? Is this what God would have me to do? I hope this has been a blessing to you. As we think about the between years, understanding that we go through transitions in our life. And each of these transitions we go through, whether we're going through that as a family or we're going through that as an individual, are crucial to our faith. And when we go through these transitions, let's stop and give some intention to the idea that probably Satan's going to hit us hard during that time period. Satan's going to test us. It's going to be a trial. And we've got to be prepared, and we've got to patiently walk with Christ. If you have a need to respond to the Lord's invitation, please come as together we stand and sing at this time.